Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, finally, some good news. California is starting to reopen in a pretty significant way up and down the state. Millions of vaccinations accomplished. So we're talking with Dee Dee Myers, who is now running the reopening process for the state. She's one of California Governor Gavin Newsom's top advisors. Of course, many of you know Dee Dee Myers from her time as Bill Clinton's press secretary, from her time as a consultant on my favorite show, The West Wing, her time as one of the top executives at Warner Brothers. So really fascinating person who's lived a whole lot of lives. We'll talk with Dee Dee Myers a little bit later. We'll talk to the brothers behind Midas Touch. All their videos combined have more than 1 billion views. It started as sort of a quarantine hobby, and they've really blossomed into one of the most influential names in all of politics online. It's pretty extraordinary. So we'll hear from them in a second, but let's begin with Dee Dee Myers and that topic of California's reopening.
Dee Dee Myers, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thank you, Alex, and I'm glad you have such great taste in television drama.
That is for sure. We'll talk more about that a little bit later, but let's start with the pressing issues of the day. And as someone who is literally tasked with overseeing business reopening in this state, how would you describe the state of our economic state in California?
Well, we're poised for recovery. I mean, I think this is a really encouraging moment. It's been such a difficult year. It's almost exactly a year for everybody. And we've been through a tremendous amount, and the economy's been through a tremendous amount, but we're really poised for recovery. And there's a lot of good news out there. California's gone from reporting something like 53,000 COVID cases per day, Alex, to your earlier mention, to under 4,000 this week. The positivity rate's gone from 14 down to 2.2. Hospitalizations are down more than 80%. ICUs are down 75%, and vaccine distribution, which is the game changer, is really ramping up. And that's very encouraging. And in fact, on Friday, well, we were able to announce that we met our vaccine equity target, which means that many counties get to move to less restrictive tiers. And so in the, just this weekend, we're seeing 13 counties move into less restrictive tiers, including LA, where I am, which has moved in into the red county, and many more, 11 more early next week. So that is really exciting and means that our businesses can start to reopen safely and with health in mind and top of mind. But nonetheless, we're seeing a pretty quick moving forward across the economy. And that will be very good for workers as we go back to work. It'll be good for all of us to be able to get back to something that looks a little more like normal life in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and that vaccine equity metric was 2 million vaccines in the arms of low-income folks. That goal has been met. So there are several trillion dollars in federal stimulus that are coming and several billion dollars in state stimulus as well. This week, the governor posting this picture with some business owners in Baldwin Park. They are among the beneficiaries of a $2 billion grant program for California small businesses. There are a lot of people watching this right now, Dee Dee, that have had a really tough year and can really use some of that help. How do they get that aid?
Well, the first step is to go to CAReliefGrant.com. And that will, that's a one-stop shop to find out more information about who's eligible and how to apply. The application process is pretty simple. And Alex, we've given away $500 million in the first two rounds of those grants. 40,000 small businesses have benefited. But we found out, because we got 340,000 applications, that that wasn't going to be enough. And so working with the legislature, the governor signed an emergency action package or an immediate action package last week that provided an additional $7.6 billion, including $2 billion for these small business grants. So these are small businesses with revenues of $2.5 million or less, and the grants are from $5,000 to $25,000, and they need to cover COVID-related expenses. But again, the application process is fairly simple. There's instruction and help available in many languages, and there's a lot of partners around the state that can help people apply. So again, it's CAReliefGrant.com.
All right. So when you say all these numbers, we're talking about a lot of money here, right? Everything that is happening both within the state and the federal government. Republicans uniformly voting against the federal stimulus, saying it's just too big, and pointing to the fact that California actually has a budget surplus. Now, after the last stimulus last year, we had tens of billions of dollars in unemployment fraud in California. How do you protect against that? And what do you say to people who worry that all this money going around is simply too much money, especially for government to have?
Well, for example, in our small business grant program, we have protections in there against fraud and waste and abuse, and that was very important to us as we designed the program. There have been problems in unemployment distribution, not just in California, but around the country, and I think the government, the federal government, is going to try to put in additional protections against that. That is a problem. It is a challenge. But the really important thing is that millions and millions of Americans and millions of Californians have really been, knocked back by the COVID and by the recession, and they need to get a little bit of money back in their pockets to get back on their feet, to cover back rent or to pay employees if they have a small business, or to cover their inventory, or to put food on the table in many cases. And so this money coming both from the federal government, and by the way, you mentioned the state surplus. We've managed our resources really well in California, and we thought we were going to see a much tougher year than we did. People on the high end of the income spectrum did very well, and as a result, the state budget is more flush than we expected. Those funds are being reinvested into getting our schools back open, right? Providing testing and supplies to safely open, making sure we test teachers and other school employees to get schools back open safely. That's really important to opening the economy. And then we're providing, you know, the grants to small businesses as well as other supports, some tax relief, some regulatory relief to allow businesses, again, to get up on their feet. And then additional support for people, whether it's rent or additional food bank supplies, things like that, daycare subsidies to help people get back to work, get back to their lives, and get the economy moving again. And as the governor said, we don't expect to just come crawling back. We're going to roar back because this economy is poised to really, just ignite and go forward. Well, but we want to do it safely. Yeah. I'll say that.
So let's talk broadly about where California is at, because over the last few months, we've been operating under this tier system. Let's put that up on the screen right now. And if you notice, this is all about restrictions in terms of what levels you are at. There is a purple tier, a red tier, an orange tier, and a yellow tier. But one color is missing. And I asked the governor about that this week. Here's what he had to say. Right now, we don't have a green tier. We don't have 100% reopening. Is that something now you're starting to think about?
It's a good question. And so we are working quite literally on a green tier. As we get to 10, 15, 20 million vaccinations, get closer and closer to herd immunity, then we will start to make it clear that these tiers were temporary.
So what does a potential green tier look like?
Yeah, that's what we're working on. What does that look like? You know, the president of the United States has said that, you know, first it was that he expected, federal government expected everyone who wanted a vaccine, every adult who wanted a vaccine could get one by the end of May. Now they're looking at doing it closer to the beginning of May. So when everyone has access to a vaccine, and then you provide education and access, you know, additional access for people who have been most impacted by this, who've been most hard hit, who've seen the most sickness and other health impacts, we got to make sure that they really, you know how to get it. Then you have to start to relax those tiers even more. I mean, this is a planned obsolescence. We want this tier system to go away. But in the meantime, there are some flashing caution signs out there with these variants, and we want to make sure that we open carefully, that we open safely, and that we never have to go backwards. You know, we don't want to have to ever see, LA County go from red back into purple, or another county move back from orange into red. So we have to move forward cautiously. But at some point, the economy will be able to fully reopen. We're not ready to say yet when that is, but we're starting to provide guidance for additional sectors about how they can safely reopen. So, for example, last week, we provided guidance for theme parks and for outdoor events like baseball games, right? So Dodger Stadium will be open for a limited number of fans on opening day. By the end of this month, we'll have additional guidance for sectors that haven't been covered yet. For example, events like, can you safely have a wedding? How can you do that? How many people can come? So we'll provide additional guidance on those events. I know people are really eager to know that. It won't happen right away, but there will be a path forward for people to begin, again, to get back to some semblance of normal life, to be able to plan. And by the way, that's really important for many of our hardest hit sectors like travel and tourism, which, you know, and the convention business and things like that, that really have had to just, you know, sit it out. And it's been really hard.
Because we have seen right now, there are other states that are going back to 100% capacity, no masks right now. I mean, when you're talking about a green tier, is that what you're eventually talking about? 100% capacity, getting rid of the mask mandate, basically you can go back to business as sort of normal?
You know, it's a great question. And we have, I mean, you know, does the green tier include masks, or will it be something, you know, will we describe that when masks can come off? I think we can expect that there will be more openings with still some restrictions and some, you know, advice to maintain the safety behaviors that have gotten us out of this so far. So that's a work in progress, and it's a great question. I mean, you have Dr. Fauci and others saying that they expect to see a lot of mask wearing through at least the end of the year. They've certainly counseled not to rip the mask off and not to reopen the economy too fast and not to ignore those flashing yellow lights of these variants until we know more. But there's also a lot of good news, right? The vaccines appear to be pretty effective against the variants. Even when they're not 100% effective against all disease, they're 100% effective against death, 100% effective against death. That is so important. And that's all three vaccines. So there's a lot of good news out there. There's still some, you know, need for caution. And look, California has been driven by science and by the need to make sure that people are safe. And that's going to continue to be our North Star. But again, we're going to evolve in response to changing circumstances. And today, there's a lot more good news than bad news.
Let's talk for a moment about you. A lot of folks first got to know you in the 1990s as Bill Clinton's press secretary. Here's your last day in that job when you got a surprise visitor.
Oh, my God!
I just wanted to come in here and say in front of all you how very grateful I am for everything Dee Dee has done.
And I'm going to replace her.
No one is going to replace her.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, what was sort of a key lesson you learned during that experience in the 90s working in the White House that you now you're able to apply to this job in California?
You know, I learned so, we could spend hours on that one, Alex, but I think one of the things I learned from Bill Clinton is never give up. I mean, he's the most resilient person I've ever known. He believes deeply in the ability of people coming together to try to drive toward common goals and make people's lives better, and that you never give up. And I think that's the main thing that I took away is that, you know, you have ups and you have downs and you have pandemics and you have recessions. And if you just keep your shoulder to the wheel, you can make things better. And so I took kind of an endless sense of optimism that I learned from him and from, you know, having the great privilege of serving our country. And so I'm very privileged again to be back and help move California through this difficult time. And it's very encouraging to see that light at the end of the tunnel.
Of course, Bill Clinton is one of Gavin Newsom's political role models. And if you listen to Gavin Newsom speak, you actually will see a lot of Bill Clinton's mannerisms in the process. I'm wondering, Gavin Newsom has become a lot more accessible in the last few weeks, doing a lot more media. The strategy has changed, frankly, since you took over as well. I'm wondering, what's the idea behind that?
Well, I'm not going to take any credit for that. I think what happened was we went from the very darkest period of this recession, right, November, December, and January, where, again, we had more than 50,000 infections a day, to a period where people, you know, infection rate is coming down at a dramatic pace. The number of vaccinations is going up at an almost equally dramatic pace. That's created an environment where it's safer to move around and where there's an opportunity for the governor to go out and encourage people to get their vaccines, to visit vaccination sites, to meet with small business owners who've gotten these grants and who are beginning to see a return of some business and some hopefulness as the economy starts to come back to life. And so I think it's circumstances, and the governor's vision is to get this economy back on its feet, to provide the resources that we're lucky to have through good fiscal management in California and through a federal partner that's going to provide, you know, tremendous amount of support to get California back. And we were really gratified to see UCLA in this past week came out with a study, and it forecast that the U.S. economy and the California economy would come back more quickly because we have things like technology and logistics and also our travel and tourism industry, which is both been hard hit, but it's always kind of a leader when we come out of the tough times. And so it's very encouraging to see the hope on the horizon, and to think that within the next few months, we'll be able to move around a lot more. We'll be able to go out, see people, see friends and families, again, always being conscious of safety. But something as the summer comes that feels more like real life.
You know, I can't have you on the show without asking at least one question about the West Wing. So you were a consultant on the show, largely credited as being one of the main inspirations for C.J. Craig, this badass White House press secretary character that they had. For people that haven't watched the show, here is C.J. talking about Saudi Arabia.
The royal family allows the religious police to travel in groups of six carrying nightsticks, and they freely and publicly beat women. But Brutus is an honorable man. 17 schoolgirls were forced to burn alive because they weren't wearing the proper clothing. Am I outraged? No, Steve. No, Chris. No, Mark. That is Saudi Arabia, our partners in peace.
So how realistic is the West Wing, and how much is CJ really like you?
Well, look, CJ and the actress Allison Janney, who's a marvelous actress, one of the most decorated actresses in both television and film. So such an honor to be able to work with her during those years. You know, look, there was a lot that was obviously fiction and drama. And Aaron Sorkin, the great creator, always said he was there to entertain and not to provide a history lesson. But there's so much history lesson in there. And I think he was always a little disingenuous about that. I think he really wanted to do both. I think, you know, the fictional world happens with a handful of people. And as we all know, the real world has a lot more decision makers in it, and the decision making process is a lot more complicated. But the big themes of it, how many issues confront the president and his team every day, and how quickly things move and how complicated they are, and how many compromises you sometimes have to make, is very rings true. And the other thing that I always thought rung true was that there was a lot of people there, all the people, all the characters in the show are there for the right reason. They're trying to do their best to make the country better. They don't always get it right. Mm-hmm. They make mistakes, they get in their own way. They sometimes have fun, they sometimes have their personal tragedies and foibles, but at the end of the day, they're there for the right reasons. And I have always believed that was true, despite party, that most people in public service go for the right reasons and try to do their best to move us forward.
So we saw this sort of mini West Wing reunion in October when they did this special episode to try to get out the vote. Do you think there should or will be more West Wing?
You know, Aaron, he's sort of been reluctant to do that, but he sort of never said never at the same time. There's an ongoing story to be told. I think the world would love it if Aaron decided to pick up the pen again on this topic, because the world has changed so much since the early 90s, or the late 90s when the show came on in 99. But there's still a lot of story to be told and how things operate. You know, just the advancement of technology, and in this moment, the bitter partisanship.
So based off of what you just said, it sounds like you would be open to the idea of a West Wing coming back.
I would. Sure, I'm available. I'll reduce my role as a consultant to, as you described it, the greatest TV show of all time. No, it was really a fun chapter in my life, and I'm really proud to be associated with the show. And I'm really gratified that so many young people over the years have told me that it inspired them to public service and interest in politics. And so if there's more of that, I'm all in.
All right. Well, Dee Dee, we are so appreciative of you being on. We thank you for being here.
Our thanks to Dee Dee Myers. Now to the Micellus brothers. We first met them about 6 months ago, when they were first becoming a big thing online. Now they're just extraordinarily huge. They have their own podcast called Midas Touch. They have their own media network. Their videos have been seen about 1 billion times online, and that's not even an exaggeration. 600 million times on Twitter alone. They have 1.5 million followers in social media. So we talked to them about their journey, about their success, about what's next, about what's changing for politics, what's changing for media. Here they are, the Micellus brothers.
Here are the brothers. They each bring different experiences to the table. Ben Micellus is an attorney. He's a partner at Gergos & Gergos. Among his past clients, Colin Kaepernick. Brett is an Emmy award-winning editor who has worked on high-profile projects, including The Ellen DeGeneres Show. And Jordy is a marketing supervisor. His fans appreciate the fact that he's developed into an Instagram model of sorts for Midas Touch merchandise. So that is another skill set that he's bringing to the table. Gentlemen, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thanks for having us.
To be here.
Yeah. All right, Ben, let's start with you. There are a lot of people who talk about politics online. What do you think has been the key to becoming so viral so often in such a relatively short period of time?
I think we're relentless with the content. We trust our instincts. And we speak from the heart. You know, I think sometimes you see politicians being very disingenuous, politicians using doublespeak. We try to keep it simple, stupid. We try to deliver messages that people understand, and we try to speak for the people, not for millionaires, not for billionaires, for the workers out there. And we think that where we're connecting with is to the bipartisan support of the people, maybe not the bipartisan support of politicians, but overwhelmingly on the issues that we're fighting for, on COVID relief, on raising the minimum wage, on making education affordable. All of those issues overwhelmingly are supported by the people. And that's where we live and where we thrive.
And Jordy, after President Trump lost, you really targeted those Georgia runoff races. Explain your strategy there and how you might use that same strategy in other states going forward.
You're exactly right. We went hard after Georgia once Trump lost the presidency because those two seats were vital. So what we did a really good approach of, and I think people sometimes who are, you know, more traditional marketers in the sense of, you know, overvaluing TV through no fault of their own is exactly how I was taught. What we did such a good job of during Georgia is figuring out how our TV complemented our out-of-home, how our out-of-home complemented our digital and social presence, how our social then complemented our TV. The big three of marketing, if you would. So it was really interesting to see how all that connected. And from TV, from out-of-home, to canvassing efforts, to just digital billboard trucks, anything and everything, you name it, we were doing it.
Yeah, and because you guys raised a lot of money, you were able to pump that into that race. And then, of course, we saw the Democrats won there, and now so much of legislation is different because of that. And Brett, you all also decided to troll CPAC a bit. This is the conference in Florida where conservatives recently gathered. And on your podcast, when you were interviewing California Congressman Eric Swalwell, you talked about this.
Yeah, Representative Swalwell was a fan.
Let me play that and then get you to respond. Okay.
We actually had a billboard truck circling the venue that called it the January 6th reunion.
I saw those on Twitter. That was you guys?
Yeah.
That's great.
And then the back of them said Trump 2024 to life.
Now, of course, President Trump was such an animating force for you and your supporters. You already see a lot of people are starting to check out of politics news now that he's gone. How do you keep people motivated when Democrats are now in the majority and you don't have that foil to go against?
Well, here's the thing, Alex. The fight is not over. The fight is just beginning. So the fact is we do have a foil because, in my opinion, we have two parties in this country, one party that is a pro-democracy party in the Democratic Party, and then we have an authoritarian party that's trying to fill the void that is Trump and Trumpism. So while that was funny and humorous, and I know Representative Swalwell got a kick out of our efforts in CPAC, we want to highlight the real threat of the GOP and these anti-democratic views. And we think that we could still engage people along that platform and saying, hey, it doesn't matter if you're left, right, center, whatever. Do you believe in democracy? If so, join us on our mission, because this is an existential crisis for our country and we need you now.
Ben, where do you think politics goes after Trump?
I think it goes to, as Brett stated, it goes to fighting for democracy. As the GOP, we call him now the GQP, they've really dug in their heels of supporting this man who's banned from social media, who resides in a literal country club in Mar-a-Lago, and they no longer speak for the people. And we have to fill that void. We understand that sometimes politics isn't that sexy or isn't that entertaining, but it's incumbent on us to make it so. And so we're focused, for example, on a Midas University program where we've set up over 20 chapters in different universities across the country. We hope to expand that to 100 in the next few months. We have to engage with the youth. We're speaking to high school students. And so our effort is not just a two-year plan for the midterms. It's not just a four-year plan for the presidential. We're looking at 2030. We're looking at 2040. And we know that this fight is an existential one. And we're blessed to be on the front lines. But with that comes great responsibility. And we're willing to take that responsibility and turn it into action.
And when you say GQP, that's in reference to QAnon and some of the people that are conservatives that are followers of the QAnon conspiracy theories. Jordy, to that point, though, of how to get young people engaged, as the youngest brother, who I know has talked about bringing sexy back into politics, how do you make politics engaging for a generation that maybe engages with media, engages with information in such a different way?
You know, you're really crushing me on that one. The brothers are going to make fun of me so much once we get off of here. You know what? It's all about being always on. It's an always on approach, I think, as we alluded to earlier, and showing up on every platform that you can. When we first started Midas, we made a very intentional decision to be on YouTube, to be on Instagram, to be on Facebook, to be on Twitter, but really then to also show up on TikTok and other platforms where other political action committees weren't necessarily showing up, just to show, you know, the next generation of progressive voices, hey, we're your outlet. If you want to get your voice heard, come to us, come follow us. We're here to amplify you.
All right. Well, the Midas Touch guys are sticking around for more. We're going to talk more about that issue of the future of the media. Where do they see it going?
What do you think when you see comments by Republicans like Ted Cruz, who he tweeted a few weeks ago? He said, today's Dems are the party of the rich.
It is laughable. Okay. I
don't know if I could be. That's Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan on the Midas Touch podcast this week. If only I could use the language that you guys are allowed to use. We're back with the brothers behind Midas Touch, Jordy, Brett, and Ben Mycelis. Brett, you all recently launched your own media network. Where do you guys see the future of media, news, politics? Where do you see all that headed?
Well, I think media is going to continue to be fragmented the way we've seen it happen. And what I think needs to be out there is there's no really unapologetic pro-democracy voice out there. I think that you, Alex, you do a really good job at when somebody is on your show, if they say it's sunny out and behind them it's raining, you call them out and you say, hey, I don't think so. It's raining. I see it with my own eyes. And too often the media out there gives credence to both perspectives. They say, oh, well, he says it's raining, he says it's sunny. And oftentimes there is an answer. And so I think the media needs to be loud and vocal in calling out the truth. And I think that's where Midas Media Network comes in. We just launched our first series called The Divided State of America with this incredibly talented comedian, singer named Heather Gardner. It's like a Samantha Bee style daily show style show once a week, every Thursdays. I think by having programming like that that's released often, by having news programming, by having podcast programming, we could compete with the best. And I think at this point, I think that's where the conservative, the right-wing media does a very good job. They're able to fill these spaces, and we need to fill the void on the other side by presenting the truth and facts to people and get the facts out there quicker than the lies, quicker than the conspiracies could ever get out there.
Ben, though, are you concerned at all about an echo chamber effect? As in, you talk to people who are already with you, and there's no discussion really between people who disagree. Like on this show, obviously this show this week is going to be more left because you guys are on it, but we've had shows that are more right. We've had shows where you have somebody on the left and the right come on together to discuss. Are you worried that people on either side are not hearing the other side?
No, because, I mean, not from our perspective. I mean, because we are speaking to issues, and we know that the issues we're speaking to have bipartisan support amongst the people. We're speaking to issues like raising the minimum wage and protecting workers and giving more people health care. The GOP, or as I've called them on the last segment, the GQP, they are yelling and shouting and pretending that they support these issues. And we need to make it very clear, as Congressman Tim Ryan said, that we're the ones who are passing the $1.9 trillion stimulus package that is overwhelmingly supported by 75% of Americans. We need to just make clear that we are the voice of those issues. And when we speak, sometimes you may preach to a choir, but if your choir sings louder than the other choir, you win elections. And in past, the Democratic Party was not preaching to their choir. You know, Trump preached to their choir. He's out there doing 10 appearances. You know, he's going from Ohio to Florida and he's doing all those press ops. And the Democrats sometimes take that for granted. So we're bringing this new aggressive style, unapologetically pro-democracy and pro-issues that matter. These are our issues. We should be proud of these issues. And that's what we're looking forward to doing.
And Jordan, you guys have put up a whole lot of content over the course of the last year. What does the best? What are the biggest hits? And what have you learned from that?
Oh, wow. I think we have to go back. There are so many, but one of my favorites is going back to what we were talking about earlier, Georgia, when we did the Grinches of Georgia spot. I encourage everyone to look that up. It was such a unique spot for us because the way we even rolled that out, it was more like a movie campaign than a traditional political messaging. We had billboards that coincided with exactly what went on during the commercial. We had mailers that went out, and you know, our social and digital presence was complementing everything. The amount of earned media that we earned off of that alone, I mean, brands would absolutely kill for. So Grinches of Georgia is right there at the top of my heart, along with probably the first video that we've made, which was Trump the Snake.
Yeah, and I know you couldn't see it, but earlier when you were talking about Georgia, we were playing that Grinch of Georgia video as well, because we picked that out as one of the highlights as well. All right, we've got one more segment with the brothers. This is where we're going to have some fun. Next week on The Issue is one of the top political impressionists on TikTok, Matt Friend. Here he is doing politicians reacting to Harry and Meghan's interview with Oprah.
What you have to realize is, to Harry and Meghan, I understand completely the what it's like to feel trapped in your tiny little shell, scoobity-boop-boop, scoobity-doo, like Ted Cruz in Cancun.
You know what, Mr. McConnell? You have to know that going to Cancun was my decision. I did feel trapped by the outcome, just like Harry and Meghan. Bernie Sanders, what do you have to say, you radical leftist elite?
Ho, ho, Mr. Cruz, you are a psychopath.
Matt Friend with us next week on The Issue is. We wrap up this week with other viral stars, the Micellus brothers, the guys behind Midas Touch. I want to play one moment from one of the podcasts you did. This is with President Trump's niece, Mary Trump, where you all had a bet on who she said would be the dumbest member of the family. Here's that moment.
If you had to pinpoint it, which of his kids is the dumbest?
I totally convinced it's Donnie.
Junior?
Yep.
Wow.
I think
Jordy wins the bet.
I definitely won that, Mary.
Jordy got that one right. So, inspired by your own questioning and your own game, we're going to do our own game here. I want you all to try to answer honestly a few questions about the three of you as we all get to know you better. So, who is the smartest brother?
Just going to go Ben. Because he's got a law degree.
Okay, Ben. Yeah. Ben wins for the smartest brother. Who is the funniest brother?
Ben.
I'm gonna go Jordy on this one.
Okay.
Really?
Who is the most athletic brother?
Oh, absolutely, Jordy.
It's definitely me, hands down. They can't do anything.
Who is the best cook?
Me. Ooh, for sure.
Brett. For sure.
No,
Brett.
No, not even close.
And
not
what's
even close.
Your specialty, Brett?
A penny al vodka.
Good job.
and finally, perhaps most important, who is the best looking brother?
Jordan.
I mean, we're not about to start a Twitter war here. It's clearly everybody goes to Jordy. He's the Twitter.
He's the youngest. If you rewound when I was however young Jordy is, it could have been a close competition. But Jordy's the youngest. We'll give it to him.
Okay. Some people though get better with age. Look at Tom Brady.
There you go.
Our thanks to the Micellus brothers and to Dee Dee Myers and to you for listening. And got some bonus content this week that didn't make it onto TV if you're listening to the Issue Is podcast. Also, speaking of podcasts, I want to let you know I was on a podcast this week. If you want to hear more from me as the guest, Anthony Scaramucci, who's one of our favorite guests here on the Issue Is, invited me onto his podcast, which is called Mooch FM. So just search for that, Mooch FM. He also interviewed Michael Cohen this week. So I'm eager to hear that conversation as well. Next week, we've got an incredible political impressionist named Matt Friend. He's going to be joining us. I really look forward to that. That's going to be hilarious. Plus, we'll see what happens in the news next week. Hopefully, it's good news. The big story is going to be, I think, that a lot of the state of California is opening back up again. Hope to connect with you in social media. In the meantime, at Alex Michelson, Alex with an E. Thanks so much for listening. See you next week for more of The Issue Is.